Dr. Moffitt?
Present.
Dr. Hunter?
Here.
Dr. Mastardis?
Call her name again.
Mr. Evanom? Dr. Mastardis? Noted absent.
Thank you.
Mr. Evanov? Noted absent. Mona Baskin? Noted absent.
Sorry.
Margaret Wayman?
No, I was, Paula, pardon me, I was on mute. This is Mona Baskin, I'm present.
Okay, okay, Mona Baskin is here. Margaret Whalen?
Present.
And Paula Hollins is here.
Thank you very much. At the President's report, I will read the board meeting statement of purpose, April, before we get going. I'm getting some feedback. I'm hearing my voice a little bit after I talk, so I don't know if that's something we can fix or not.
Hi, Dr. Mastardis
someone...
here.
Oh, thank you. Noted for
sorry.
There we go.
Come find the number.
Good morning.
It's right there.
Okay. I'm going back to the board meeting statement of purpose. A license to practice optometry in this state is a privilege granted by the Arizona Legislature through the Optometric Practice Act. In 1907, on behalf of the people of the state, the legislature created the Arizona State Board of Optometry to regulate the practice of the profession of optometry, issue licensure where appropriate, and in general assure the public that the practice of optometry will be conducted with reasonable skill and safety by persons who meet the curriculum requirements to hold a Doctor of Optometry degree from an accredited optometry school. To enforce the Optometric Practice Act, the board reviews applications for licensure and complaints relative to the conduct of its licensed optometrist and is charged with determining if the provisions of the Optometric Practice Act are met. In addition, the board may promulgate rules and policies in conformity with the stated purpose of the board and the mission as mandated by law. As of January 1st, 2019, all board meetings are digitally recorded with the recordings of the audio available to the public on the board's website under the consumer information link. I would also like to say that since this is a telephonic meeting, anyone who's going to speak, please state your name when you speak, and only one person is to speak at a time, which should be the case in any meeting, but sometimes we get carried away with that. So if someone is speaking and you have something to say, just wait till they're finished, state your name, and then say what you need to say. I would also like to say that I'm glad this is a telephonic meeting and not a Zoom meeting or something with video, because I haven't had a haircut in 6 weeks, and you know how I cut my hair real short. It's pretty amazing right now. It's even curling in the back, but that's besides the point. And I'd also like to say that we're lucky we're not on a Zoom meeting, because I could take the control of this meeting to even higher standards by having a mute button, which I don't have. So you guys are lucky I can't do that to you. So I'd like to move on to D, review, discussion, and possible action on investigative reviews, complaints. I believe I heard the complainant of number one, so we're just going to go straight to number one. That works well. Benicia Geiger, OD, IR number 202014. Dr. Mastardis, could you review that case for us, please? Someone just come on.
Who just came on the line, please?
Yes, this is Dr. Geiger.
Okay, we just called your case, Dr. Geiger, so if you'll stand by, Dr. Mastardis is going to give a summary before to get us started.
Okay, beautiful. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, so this is a complaint from...
Initials only, please.
November 27th, 2019, and it is... the complainant is L.S., against Dr. Geiger, and the summary is that she brought her daughter in for an exam, and they weren't sure that they had insurance, and so they were going to pay cash. She had an exam by Dr. Geiger. There was not enough time for her to be dilated. She wanted her daughter to be dilated, but the patient didn't have enough time to wait, and so Dr. Geiger brought him back on another day to have the dilation, but there was going to be a fee for this. And the patient did not want to pay that fee. I'm not sure if she actually was seen for the dilation.
She was not.
She did not come back for the follow-up.
It's okay. You'll have a chance to speak. Go ahead. Continue.
Yeah. Sorry. Dr. Yep. So she was not seen for the follow-up appointment, but she felt that this was price gouging?
No.
Deceptive advertising or statement. Yes. I need more help with her memory.
No, it's okay. No, you did okay. That was basically the brunt of it. So before we start talking about it, I believe the patient is on the line. Would the patient like to say, introduce yourself with initials only and tell us what you'd like us to know?
Yes, hello. I'm patient LS. We arrived at our appointment probably approximately 5 minutes early. When we walked into the office and to the reception area, Dr. Geiger and one of her staff members were eating lunch. So we, let them know we would wait outside until it was time. So, shortly thereafter, we came in, and the exam was to include a dilation. We agreed that it was going to be a cash price of $95. And what happened was Dr. Geiger, on her own, wanted to, reach out to the insurance company to see if any of it could be covered. So in the meantime, her technician took my daughter to start, having some of the exam portion done. And I immediately asked the technician and let her know that we needed to leave there by 3 o'clock. 1:30 to 3 o'clock, that is plenty of time, considering at the time there was nobody else in the office. We were the first ones and the only ones there. I think after we left, there was another patient there. Anyhow, because I needed to go pick up my daughter, which was probably a good 30 minutes away from the doctor's office. So she said, no problem. We waited a really long time, and I understand, things come up, phone calls come up. I understand that. So by the time Dr. Geiger came in for her to examine my daughter, I said to her, we still haven't had the dilation. My concern is, you have to put the drops in, you have to wait. And then with the exam, I really could not be late to pick up my daughter. And she said, it's fine, there'll be time. But it was already 2:45, and I just, like I said, was not comfortable because I cannot leave my daughter standing outside of a middle school. So she said, you can come back and do it at another time. And I said, okay, fine. Now, at that point, I think what should have been the right thing to do, Dr. Geiger should have said to me, I just want to let you know, if you do not do this today, I'm going to have to charge you an additional charge, which she referred to as a chair visit.
No, I'm in a board.
She never said that to me. We proceeded to the counter. I paid the $95. We bought some spray for my daughter's lenses. So when I proceeded to make the appointment with the gal up front, I said, can you please just make a note that I've already paid for the dilation? And she said, okay, I just need to confirm with Dr. Geiger. So she came back and let me know that, no, Dr. Geiger said absolutely not, that I would have to pay an additional charge. And I said, well, that just doesn't seem right. We've been here since basically 1:25. It's now 3 o'clock. It's not like the office was, overflowing with patients and she didn't have time. I just felt like that was wrong. And honestly, I should have been told and been made aware at that point, a few minutes before 3 o'clock that, just so you know, if you don't do this, I'm going to have to charge you a separate visit. So I just, honestly, too, I respect doctors. We have a lot of doctors in our family and nurses, and I respect everything that you all do. But everybody's time is valuable. I am a single mother. I work several hours a week. I have two daughters I'm 100% responsible for. So for me to come there on time before the visit, and to have to wait an hour and a half and still not have a complete visit. Dr. Geiger has not evaluated my daughter. I think the last time she had seen her was 5 years ago. We actually see a different eye doctor, but because of the insurance, my doctor said, well, why don't you just go see Dr. Geiger for now for this, because there was a change in insurance and my visit was going to be quite a bit. It wasn't like, she's not my daughter's physician. She really should have been dilated. And I think everybody would agree to that. And again, there was no reason me arriving at 125 and leaving at 3 that she was not dilated. So again, I don't think I should have been charged. I think it was unethical. And I just found, you know, Dr. Geiger, I know she's on the phone, to be very rude and condescending. And again, her time is no more valuable than mine or anybody else's for that matter.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Before we ask questions, Dr. Geiger, would you like to say something?
Sure. I think there's a lot of miscommunication going on here. And at the basis of it is, unfortunately, the way things were communicated to me with through the staff. I mean, and the reason that the examination was delayed, as I had written in my deposition, is I was trying to determine what her vision insurance was through, and as we know, it can take a while to get through to a representative to get the clear picture, and I did that as a courtesy to her. It was a request by her. It wasn't something I chose to do, to talk to the representative, and that delayed the process. The other thing that she mentioned with the dilation, there was not a conversation with me in the exam room. There was a conversation with a technician.
Dr. Geiger, I believe this is all considered to be under oath. You absolutely said to
me. All right. This is Mona Baskin. This needs to
my turn to talk.
Dr. Chrysagas, this is Mona Baskin. I would like both parties to speak once at a time. The patient, Ellis, has had an opportunity, and this is the licensee's opportunity to address the board. Thank you.
Thank you. So there was a miscommunication there. And as far as the payment, when we were completed with the evaluation, and she went to the front desk. The only thing that the receptionist had asked me is, do we charge, just to clarify, do we charge at when the patient comes back for dilation? And we do. That's another chair visit. So there's a $25 charge. However, in her case, had I known she was referring to this particular patient, since in the exam records she was to come back for follow-up, to check on the prescription change and the prism change, and then she would not have been charged for a dilation because she was going to be in the office anyway. However, when I came out front to try to explain this to her, she continued to talk over me and was being very rude, in my opinion, and did not want to hear anything except for the fact that I should refund her the $25. And I did have two other patients in the office, so I wasn't going to entertain that and kind of cut off the conversation to move forward.
Okay, thank you very much. We'll get back to patient LS as we discuss this, if she has something to add to that. Are there any questions that any of the board members have for the doctor or the patient?
Hey, I have a question. Doctor, you do a lot of, you were doing a sensory motor exam, right? So you wouldn't want to put dilation drops in because you were still assessing the function of the accommodation. Is that true?
That's correct, yes. As I had written, it's not possible to do a functional vision exam once the patient is dilated, so I do not dilate first thing when they enter. And knowing her history and have seen her for, you know, years prior, I knew that this was a functional vision exam, and it was where we would have to reassess the prism for her her vertical strabismus.
Okay, I have a question also. As far as the patient goes, ma'am, did you pay the $25 on that day?
Sir, I paid $95, which was to include the dilation. I had many conversations prior to coming to the office, and they were
I just asked if you paid the $25 that day, assuming you were going back for the dilation. You paid $95.
It was supposed to be done that day. I was never going to go back.
I know that. I asked if you paid $25 more that day for the dilation.
I'm sorry. I don't think I understand your question. Can you repeat that?
Meaning you didn't pay an additional $25 that day to go back for the dilation. I'm just asking.
No, I was.
They said they were going to bill you. You didn't pay it, but you. And I can't tell from the records. Did you go back for the dilation?
No, because she told me I would need to pay for a separate chair visit of $25,
okay.
And I thought that was
that's not right.
Yeah.
That's all I needed to know. Okay. Because I didn't know if you were billed for it that day or if you had paid it.
Well, I did pay for it. Yeah, I paid for the original one.
Okay. Any other questions?
Well, I just wanted to point out one thing. I understand Dr. Geiger thinks she was doing a favor for me, but shouldn't that have been done prior to the actual appointment time for her or her staff to reach out to the insurance to verify insurance claims? We've been to Dr. Doesn't matter who our doctor is, Dr. Plotnick. My daughter sees her regularly. Like I said, we've only seen Dr. Geiger one time years ago to assess her for vision therapy. She's never been under Dr. Geiger's care. I want to make that clear. Every time we've gone to Dr. Plotnick, even with insurance changes, all that was done prior to the visit, not while we were sitting and waiting to see the doctor. That's something that usually is done prior to the visit, not during the actual appointment time. And I thought that was very odd that a doctor herself would be doing that during the appointment and not maybe a staff member. But again, everybody, you know, runs their office differently, I guess.
May I speak to that?
Please.
So we did verify the insurance that you provided to us, which was your medical insurance, and let you know that you were out of network, and that's why we let you know that it would be a cash pay price for you since you were out of network for your particular medical insurance. When you entered the office and presented your card, on the back of your medical card in very tiny print, it did say that you have a vision plan. So I did, again, out of a courtesy, I decided to call that number to see if your examination would be appropriate to put under vision care. And the reason that doesn't happen at your ophthalmologist or other offices is because optometry is one of these fields where we take vision care plans as well as medical insurance plans, and I understand that's very confusing to patients. But short-staffed. My office manager was on maternity leave at the time. So I, again, did the courtesy to check on your vision plan on my own, which you're very correct. A doctor would not be doing that. But because I had seen your daughter at Nationwide Vision in the past, and I wanted to provide her the care and be fair with your fees, I, as a courtesy, decided to check for your vision care plan.
May I speak?
Okay.
So, again, we established before my appointment that I was going to pay the $95 out of pocket. I was going to be a cash patient. I had talked to a few different people at your office, including yourself, prior to the exam when I walked in. You did ask me about the card. I did give it to you. But, again, if you maybe didn't take as much time being on the phone, I probably would have had ample time for the dilation. I mean, we were there for an hour and a half, Dr. Geiger. That's a long time to be at for a visit. So, again, if that was the case, when I got there and I stated, I want to make sure we're going to have enough time for the dilation. I need to go pick up my other daughter. And again, I said it to you on two different occasions. And I said it to you while we were in the office. Your back was towards me. You were looking at my daughter's eyes. I remember the conversation vividly. And you should have at that point have said, I'm so sorry. You're probably right. We're not going to have enough time. You have to drive clear across town this time of the day. There's quite a bit of traffic. No, we're not going to have time to dilate. Maybe I would have said, you know what? I don't want to pay the extra $25 and to come another day. Let me see if I can arrange for a ride for my other child somehow. But that would never, ever, ever convey to me. That is my issue. I should have been made aware at that moment when you said, don't worry, you can come back another time. And you knew it was a one-time visit. I was had no plans on returning. Dr. Plotnick is my daughter's physician, and he's been her doctor since she's been 3 or 4 years old. And we visit him very, very regularly. But because, thankfully, she hasn't
okay,
had
ma'am,
any
ma'am.
Issues.
Okay, I think we've heard all this before, so I'm gonna stop you right now only because now we're getting into redundancy. So I guess this, to start the conversation out, I will say a few things, only because I, in essence, see both sides of the story. First and foremost, the fact that we don't really care that Dr. Plotnick is a physician only because you decided to go to Dr. Geiger for the exam. For whatever reason, it doesn't matter. We wouldn't be having this conversation if you hadn't gone there. And number two, as far as dilation goes, not all doctors dilate prior to the exam, especially on children, because it affects the accommodative system. So I in my office, and I'm sure the other board members, on a child, we would do the exam, come up with a prescription, then we dilate to see if the prescription is different. So waiting until later to do the dilation is totally normal. Where the problem comes in is the fact that you couldn't do it that day and the whole $25 thing and everything. So in essence, I see that point, but I don't see a problem with not dilating at first. And I also would say I commend the doctor for trying to rectify any
Hello,
insurance.
Hello, Dr. Kasagas. This is Mona Baskin. I was disconnected. I'm back on the line. I apologize. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Okay. So basically what I'm trying to say is that little thing on the back of your card that says there's a vision plan might have saved you some money because especially if it's a Blue Cross Blue Shield plan, they kind of hide that on there. So the fact that she was trying to do that for you was to try and save you some money and not pay the $95. So, again, I don't have a problem with that either. So as far as that part of the exam, I just wanted to, in essence, for lack of a better term, educate you as to why it might have been done that way. Now, going forward, any other board member have anything to say about what transpired that day?
This is Dr. Moffitt. Oh, go ahead, Dr. Hunter.
Okay.
I have a question for Dr. Geiger, if we can move back.
Sure.
Dr. Geiger, do you separate your charges and your exams from dilated and non-dilated exams? Do you charge $95 for a dilated exam and $65 for a non-dilated exam? Do you separate the dilated part?
It is the same amount based on the time I spent with the patient, whether they dilate that day, or choose to not dilate that day. I only charge separately on top of that when they dilate. I don't know. That's kind of confusing. I don't reduce my fees. But there's a separate dilation fee on top of that if they choose to dilate.
Is there a separate, this is Dr. Kasagas, is there a separate fee if they choose to dilate or a separate fee if they return to dilate?
So there is a separate fee for dilation if they return for dilation.
Right, exactly. Okay, thank you. Dr. Well, I can't remember who had a question.
Doctor. So this is Dr. Moffitt. I just had a few comments I thought I would make on behalf of patient's mother, LS. Just just some observations, having heard both sides here. The so some pieces of information I think that are maybe helpful to understand in this context. An eye exam may have different components to it. It's not broken down, like the dilation is not a procedure or a separate billable procedure. It's part of an eye exam, and particularly when you have a child with an underlying binocular vision issue or dysfunction, the dilation affects the system. And so you cannot measure and get an accurate result for what is in that child's best interest. If you put drops into the system, it alters the results. And so the exam and the way that it was done is all proper. And even in a pediatric ophthalmologist's office, if you have a child who's being examined, they may break it down into components too. They may do an undilated portion, and then they may have you come back for dilation with something called cycloplegia and compare the results. It's just at the discretion of the physician how they want to go after this problem, however it presents. But the dilation is not a separate billable procedure. It is part of an overall eye exam, and it doesn't have a separate fee. So you may have an exam where you don't have a dilation, but you still charge a certain price for, an agreed upon price in your case, a self-pay type of fee doesn't necessarily include dilation or not. That would be at the discretion of the doctor and the child's parent in this instance. But those are some things that I think are important to keep in mind. And I'll reiterate what I think some of the other board members are also indicating, that Dr. Geiger went out of her way as a courtesy to check to see if you had reimbursement available from another source so that you wouldn't have to pay as much for the eye exam. And she's right in saying that most doctors would not check that. I've never done that for a patient. And it happens even in my own office where patients come in and there is concern that they may have a benefit available from another source, and we'll check it for them, but they do end up waiting while that is being checked. You can't proceed in some instances without authorization from insurance or other matters such as that. So sometimes the patient does wait for that. And it seems like there was some miscommunication here between parties, but this all looks very proper to me.
Thank you.
May I speak?
Not yet. Thank you. I'll give you a chance. Are there any other questions or comments? Before we get into a motion and further discussion, I would just like to say, though, on the on behalf of the patient, I think there was a miscommunication as far as the $25. The fact that, I mean, we all have patients that we have to reschedule for dilation. I mean, whether it happens to you or not, I don't know, but it happens to me. And when they come back, I do not charge them, only because, well, I feel guilty doing it. Could I? Yeah, I think I could. I think legitimately, legally, I could. I choose not to because they've already paid for the exam. Yeah, they're taking another slot, but for whatever reason, they couldn't dilate at that point in time. And if there is a fee, I would definitely be sure and tell the patient that in the chair so they knew ahead of time. So I do agree with the patient on that part. I don't have any problem with the care and the way it was done, or the fact that the insurance. My only problem is my only concern is the fact that there was going to be a fee to come back, and it really wasn't expressed until she said, "I want to let you know I paid for this." Oh no, we're going to charge another $25 to come back. That to me is a miscommunication with the patient. Now, because we've talked a lot, I'll let the patient wanted to say one more thing. I'll let her say that before I entertain a motion and further discussion. Ma'am?
Sir, basically, just to speak, basically what you said, the reason I needed to come was Julia needed to be dilated. She hadn't been dilated. It was time. I made sure when I called Dr. Geiger's office and I spoke to her, and like I said, one of the gals that work there, I wanted to make sure, does that $95 include the dilation? Because if it doesn't, if it's going to be $130, then I'll just go to Dr. Plotnick and pay the $150. That was the difference. So in my mind, it's okay. She comes highly recommended from Dr. Plotnick. We had seen her years ago. It's worth saving the $55.
But so then to go, and after I was, my credit card was charged $95, oh, no, you need to pay another $25. I thought it was very wrong and unethical, and it should have been made clear. In fact, I was expecting the girl to come back to me and say, oh, yeah, you already paid for it. Just go ahead. What day do you want to come back this week? You'll be in and out. It's just a dilation. That was my issue. So.
Okay. Thank you. Would like someone like to make a motion so we can continue and discuss and
Dr. Fasagas, this is Mona Baskin. Yes. Dr. Geiger is your licensee, and Dr. Geiger should be provided the opportunity to make some closing statements or remarks or respond to that statement. Thank you.
They've been talking back and forth for the last half hour. I figured if Dr. Geiger wanted to say something else, she'd have said something to me. But Dr. Geiger, if you'd like to say something else, go ahead.
No, I'm okay with all the discussions that have happened. I've already stated in my deposition, and you know, the bottom line is that you know, it's not about patient care. It's all about the money for this particular patient, and you know, that's what's most disheartening for me, is that we've kept her daughter's vision stable and not seen double for many, many years, and that is not a variable in this whatsoever. And you know, ultimately, that $25 would not have been charged when her daughter came back for follow-up evaluation. She would have had a higher fee for her follow-up exam, more than likely another $95. That, you know, wouldn't have been just the $25 when she came back. But, you know, again, at that point, the conversation had gotten so heated that we didn't even have that conversation. And so in my mind, when she left my exam room, I was thinking, we're going to have her back for another follow-up evaluation to see how her glasses are working with the new prism amount, and we'll dilate at that time. And that's how I had left it. And there was obviously a very different conversation that happened at the front desk.
Thank you. Board members?
This is Dr. Moffitt. I'd like to make a motion that there was no violation of the Optometric Practice Act.
I second that. This is Dr. Jones.
Okay. Any discussion on the matter?
Dr. Chrysagas, this is
Dr. Chrysagas.
I have two people.
And this is Margaret Whalen. The motion is to include the actual action. I understand the board feels that there's no violation, but what is the action that she wanted, Dr. Moffitt?
I guess I'm not sure I understand your question.
Do you want to?
I see no question of ethical behavior here.
Right.
Well, do you want
this is Mona Baskin. So would that be to dismiss the matter? You have to take formal action on it. Okay.
Okay. So this is Dr. Moffitt. I'd like to make a motion to dismiss the complaint, as there is no violation of the Optometric Practice Act.
Thank you. And we have the second from Dr. Jones, I believe. Okay. I think that was a yes. It was kind of breaking up. Any discussion on the motion? Hearing none, we'll go to a vote. And we have to do a roll call vote, so if you could state your vote for the motion as I call your name. Dr. Jones? Dr. Jones? Hello? Didn't she second this motion?
She did.
Okay. Maybe she took a break. I'll come back. Dr. Moffitt?
Aye.
Dr. Hunter?
Aye.
Dr. Mastoris?
Aye.
I vote aye. Dr. Jones? Let the record show that Dr. Jones is has left the room. I don't know how you would say that,
she
Margaret.
She must have lost the connection.
Vote up at,
there she is.
Sorry.
Dr. Jones, is that you?
Yes. I picked up my phone and I hit the button. So sorry.
Well, you almost got strike three. We were taking a vote on the motion. How do you vote on the motion that you seconded?
I'll vote aye.
Okay, thank you. It's unanimous. I would like to thank the complainant and the doctor for helping us adjudicate this case. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Moving on to item number 2 under D. David Colson, OD, IR number 202016. If we were in the office, we would be having Dr. Hunter actually go sit in the audience because he has to, what are we doing, Margaret?
Recuse himself
due to a conflict of interest. So let the record show Dr. Hunter will not be a part of these discussions. And Dr. Jones, could you review this case, please?
Pardon me, Dr. Christakis, sure. Members of the board, this is Mona Baskin. Dr. Hunter, could you please state your conflict on the record?
Dr. Colson, this is Dr. Hunter. Dr. Colson and I share employers. Barnett
okay,
Delaney,
thank you.
Thank you.
All right, perfect. Thank you so much, doctor.
Thank you so much.
Dr. Jones,
okay,
could
this
you
is
summarize
Dr.
this?
This is Dr. Jones. Let me summarize this case. This patient, DF, wrote in her complaint after 7 months of no response from Barnett Delaney or Dr. Colson, she filed a complaint. She saw Dr. Colson at Barnett Delaney in 2018 and brought original medical records dating back to the early 2000s. She said she made it clear to Dr. Colson and the staff that these were original and that they could not be destroyed. She was assured by everyone, including Dr. Colson, that they would remain intact. She still has not received her records back and needs them as she has moved out of state. Do you want me to go into the doctor's response, too? Or?
No, I think that's fine. Thank you. Before we start any discussion, is the patient or the doctor on the line at all? Okay. So not hearing that, we can have a discussion or someone can make a motion straight off.
Mr. President,
I think
Mr. President, members of the board, this is Margaret Whalen. Dr. Colson emailed me late last night a copy of the email that he sent to the patient with the confirmation of the records being emailed as an attachment to her on January 11th of 2020.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
I always like to give you guys an option to speak first so that I don't control the meeting. Does anyone have anything they want to say?
Well, this is Dr. Moffitt. I have a question about the records, and maybe you can see that in the email from Dr. Colson, Margaret. But it looks like, to me, the patient's complaint is that she brought these records that dated back to 2000. But when reviewing Dr. Colson's records, what I thought was odd was that, number one, the records that preceded his visit with patient from Sansum Clinic were only from 2015, and it looks like they were requested from Dr. Colson's office, that because his name is on the fax transmission, almost like his office requested them. So my point here is that I see none of the records that the patient is referencing, and it almost looks like Dr. Colson requested, like, previous physicians' notes, and that was all that the record entailed. Is there more than that in that transmission from January, Margaret?
Thank you for your question, Dr. Moffitt. It's not very specific. It just says to the patient, here are the records you have requested. The attachment.
And what are the dates on those? What are the dates? If you can, does it show, or is it all it has is that cover sheet? You don't have the attachment that might have the records in it?
Correct. I do not have the attachment.
Did
make a request.
Yeah, because if we could. Okay.
It wasn't sent.
Well, the problem I have with this is that maybe they're going to give her whatever records they have scanned. You know, there's no reason not to. It's illegal not to. And the fact that she had these original records that she wanted to keep, my first question would be, if you know you want those back and they say they want to scan them into the record, why wouldn't you wait there until they were scanned in to make sure you got them back if it was that important to you? I mean, we all scan records into files. And I, it just, I mean, she said, I want these back. Will they be destroyed? Now, she says, they said, no, obviously they are going to destroy them because they're not going to keep them, unless, of course, a patient says they want them and they keep them off to the side. I mean, it just seems strange that if she was that intent on having the original medical records, that she would have made a point of not leaving there without them. I mean, am I off base thinking that?
This is Dr. Moffitt. I completely agree with you. I don't want 20 years worth of records in my EMR. I will actually just look at the records and scan and enter in the pertinent pieces of information that I want.
Yeah.
Right. And honestly, don't bring originals to the doctor's office. Have your own. If you want them to have copies, you bring them a copy. So.
Yes. Especially when you spent that much time working in those kind of offices like she said she did.
Yes.
But that's besides the point. So I'd like to make
and another comment on my part. Dr. Coulson honestly doesn't have a responsibility to maintain her original records. So.
Right. I would like to make a motion to dismiss this complaint for lack of violation of the Optometric Practice Act.
I second. This is Dr. Moffitt.
Thank you. Any discussion? Hearing none, we'll vote on the motion. And again, it's a roll call. Dr. Jones?
Aye.
Oh, good, she was here. Dr. Moffitt?
Aye.
Dr. Hunter?
Recused.
Oh, I'm sorry, he's recused. I'm sorry. That's a record show. He's recused, and I screwed up because I'm just going down my list. Dr. Mastoris?
Aye.
I also vote aye. It's unanimous. And we'll let the record show that Dr. Hunter is taking his place back at the table. And we'll move on to number three. Michelle Nadeau, OD, IR number 202018. Dr. Hunter, could you summarize this one, please?
Patient K.A. had a diabetic eye exam on March 20th of this year, 2020. With Dr. Nadeau at 2020 Image Eye Center. Patient KA feels good about the services provided and the materials provided. Patient KA's complaint is with the cost of the materials, which I believe was $555.50. The patient has done some price checking and feels that he could have got the same glasses for half the price he paid, and he would like some monies refunded to make the price fair. And I don't see any, I didn't see a response from Dr. Nadeau.
This is Dr. Moffitt. There was a separate email with her response, and she was, the patient was refunded.
Was that right? I missed that. I don't do that for some reason.
Mr. President, this is Margaret Whalen. May I speak?
Sure.
Thank you. Mr. President, members of the board, this morning I have received a letter from the patient KA. I'm just going to read it for the record. I think it will address some of the issues in this complaint. It says, I am not going any further with this complaint. I have been satisfied. I was given an apology and a full refund. Thank you.
Okay. Well, to be honest, we wouldn't have, I shouldn't say that, but I wouldn't have had a problem with it. I mean, we can't adjudicate what an optometrist charge for their fees as long as it's something within normal limits, and we can't compare what our fees are or what their fees are to what it was at Costco, because you're not comparing the same things. So the fact that they gave the money back and he's satisfied, I'll entertain a motion.
I make a motion, this is Dr. Jones, to dismiss the complaint due to lack of violation of the Optometric Practice Act.
Thank you.
Dr. Hunter, I second.
Thank you very much. Any discussion? Okay. We'll vote on the motion. Dr. Jones?
Aye.
Dr. Moffitt?
Aye.
Dr. Hunter?
Aye.
Dr. Mastoris?
Aye.
I also vote aye. It's unanimous. Thank you. Okay. Item E, Executive Director approval of new license application pursuant to ARS 32-3123. Is this letting us know we approved one or we have to discuss one?
We approved one. I approved.
That's what I thought.
Okay. Just for the record.
Okay. Okay. Nope. Thank you. Now, I'm assuming, like, next month or the month thereafter, there will be numerous names on there. It
yes.
being May.
Yes, most likely.
Okay. Okay, this is the calm before the storm. Okay. Item F, review discussion of possible action on license renewal fee waiver request due to COVID-19 circumstances. Pursuant to Executive Order 2020-17, the request from Dr. Cantor. Margaret, could you let us know the conversation you had or the communication you've had with him?
Yes, thank you, Mr. President, members of the board. Dr. Paul Cantor is requesting a waiver of his renewal fee for this renewal period due to financial hardship from lack of work. He's a fill-in doctor who lost his employment as fill-in during this time since a lot of offices were closed. Executive Order 2020-17 permits an agency or board, in our case, to grant a waiver to assist anybody who feels that they do have a hardship and can't pay their license fees, as the board really wouldn't be allowed to expire a license during this time until the executive order expires. So based
okay.
on...
I have a question.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, I was going to say, if you're not done, I can continue. I just have a question when you're done.
I just wanted to make sure that everybody, you know, reviewed the letter, because I think Dr. Cantor was pretty clear in his letter to the board for the request.
Right.
Okay.
So my question is, and maybe Margaret could help me because she understands executive orders better than I do, or Mona, from the legal aspect. But basically, I'm looking at precedent here, and I'm looking at going forward, and I don't have a problem doing something here, but couldn't almost every optometrist, at least in private practice, claim to have been affected by this and subsequently ask for a waiver of their fee? I mean, are we opening a Pandora's box by doing this? Now, I know, again, there's an executive order, but does the executive order say we have to waive a 200 and what do we charge?
$400.
Do we have to waive a $450 fee for a 2-year extension of your license for what's going on with COVID right now? Hopefully not lasting that long, but something in the near future will be back to somewhat normal. Are we allowed to waive a certain portion of it as we see fit? Is someone going to have to show us the loss of income before we waive their fee? I mean, I'm trying to think of this going forward. I don't think we should do anything to put that person's license away from not paying their fees. However, do we have some guidance or do we have any rules that we can say that we're going to follow? Like when we say we're going to lower his fee or he can pay half the fee next year. I don't know. I'm just grasping at straws here. I just don't know if we can arbitrarily say, yeah, you lost some income, so you don't have to pay your $450 this time. No, you didn't lose enough. I mean, how do we gauge this going forward if we decide to do something like this?
This is Margaret Whalen. Those are all excellent thoughts and questions and concerns, Dr. Chrysagas. To answer the very first part, I agree it would be setting a precedent. Even though it is part of an executive order, our board functions a little bit differently than some of the other boards because we have rolling renewals, so to speak, because a lot of boards, you know, do like an August 31st renewal or a June 30th. So that does play a little bit of a factor, both with continuing education and also the renewal fees. You know, I think the board can interpret that executive order however they see fit. With regards to, you know, like you said, the type of waiver, because theoretically the doctor has been working for 2 years prior. They just haven't been working in the last month or two. So is that something that the board feels warrants a total waiver of the fees, like you stated, you know, or is it something where the board could prorate a portion of the fee, saying, okay, we won't charge you, or we'll only charge you up until March 1st? You know, I'm not really sure. I mean, there haven't been any guidelines. We don't usually get any. It's kind of left open to each agency to interpret it how they feel it's best appropriate for their licensees. And we do not get legal advice on these from the AG's office. This is executive orders from the governor, so Ms. Baskin will not be able to assist us in this case. And it sort of supersedes our rules because it's a temporary, you know, it's an order from the governor. So, and it has an expiration date. I think it expires on May 15th, this particular order. I was just trying to look at it.
And when's his renewal date again?
Ms. Hollins, do you have that?
May 22nd.
No, I don't.
Okay, let me pull it up.
May 26th? Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
May 22nd.
Okay. This is Dr. Moffitt. I have a question.
Yes.
Well, two questions, actually. So is all of his CE complete and CPR requirements met? That's question number one. And question number two is it possible then maybe to have, instead of a, if we were to waive his fee, then the next opportunity for him to relicense is 2 years away. Is it possible then to have him renew in a shorter time frame, like if we were to grant him a waiver that would be the equivalent of a year, and then he has to pay a partial fee in a year or something like that? Do we have the discretion to do that?
Thank you, Dr. Moffitt. This is Margaret Whalen. We wouldn't really know about his continuing education or his CPR until he submits the renewal application, which he has not. But I expect that all the hours will be there because, like I said, really this time frame for the COVID pandemic crisis that was recognized finally by the state, you know, in the middle of March, you know, that's really only a month and a half or 2 months out from his renewal. So it's possible that he has the vast majority of his continuing education, unless he's a completely last-minute person and doesn't have
any.
Margaret, this is Dr. Jones. I had kind of the same kind of question. I was going to say, like, could you have him pay, like, the $225 and then it would be renew for a year? I mean, is that getting too changing the rules or something to where he paid and then we had him do it in a year when things are back to normal? Because I agree with Dr. Chrysaugus. A lot of us, you know, were out of work for, you know, a month or two and you know, including myself, I didn't take a paycheck. So it's kind of one of those things of like, you know.
Darcy, yes. Welcome to private practice.
I know.
So
Dr. Chrysaugus, members of the board. Sorry.
Ms. Baskin, go ahead.
Yes, as far as deviating from your rules and the statutes governing renewals, the board would not have the discretion to do that, and I think that's probably what Margaret was going to jump in and respond to.
Okay.
Yes, thank you, Ms. Baskin. Go ahead, Dr. Chrysaugus.
Because I was going to say, then could we not say we're not going to, that we can't change the rules of this, but we're not going to waive the fee, but could we delay the payment of the fee? Could we give him 6 months to pay the fee, that his fee is not due May 26th, but November 26th, but it's the full $450 for 2 years? And he's going to practice a year and a half or more than a year and a half of the 2 years once this passes, and he's having trouble paying it now. Later on, I don't see why, if we couldn't give him a six-month waiver of that fee, but it's due, you know, I mean, pick a number, 3 months, 6 months down the road. That way, we're not changing anything about when he's applying. We're just making a one-time extension of the due date because of the executive order from the governor. Is that doable?
Not really, because here's the quandary. So when the executive order under number one, it states that a state agency or board that licenses individuals shall defer requirements to renew licenses that have an expiration date between March 1st and September 1st of 2020 by 6 months after the expiration date, unless the requirements can be completed online. So because of that, because we have all of our stuff online for the CE, for the CPR, you know, the payments, we don't fall under that particular section of the order. The only portion of this order that really applies to our board, especially in this case, is number two, that says any fees required to be collected by the state agency or board may be waived at the state agency or board's discretion. So
basically,
no extension.
If an optometrist feels that they have not been being paid and they're having a financial hardship, if they're lucky enough to have a renewal date in May, June, or July, then that's okay. But if it's any other time, then we can't do anything for it.
That's correct. This is a special circumstance, and it's only under the executive order. Well,
yeah.
I understand it. I know what you're saying, Dr. Chrysagas, and it's because of the executive order. So if anyone ever had an issue with it, you would have to say, well, there was an executive order set forth by the governor that permitted that at the time. So, because, you know, our regular statutes and rules do not have any provision for that.
And the easy way out of this is just grant them a waiver.
Or say no.
I got a problem with that. I've got a problem with granting a waiver of a two-year renewal for $450.
Mr. President, members of the board, I think you could waive a portion of the renewal fee if you see fit. You know, like we were talking, I mean, March 1st would be the date. So if, you know, from his renewal of May of 2018 to February 29th would be this year, you know, the board staff could certainly prorate the fee. I mean, it's not going to be a huge break for him. You know, it's 2 months.
Hey,
but it's
2 months is 16%.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, this is Dr. Moffitt. Can we prorate larger than that? Like, we don't have to prorate it just based on, you know, March, April, May. Could we prorate if we wanted to, like, a 50%? And it's like, can we choose how much you want to prorate it?
Yes, you certainly can. It's the board's discretion to create the waiver however they want. So you can talk amongst yourselves and decide what you want to do.
This is Dr. Hunter.
Okay, go ahead.
Yeah, I'm wondering what happens if he doesn't pay it and we don't grant him a waiver. What's it take for him to get relicensed?
This is Margaret Whalen. Thank you, Dr. Hunter, for your question. The process would be the regular expiration process. So the license would expire on his renewal date of May 22nd this year. It would remain active but expired for 4 months after that. After the four-month time frame, the license goes into void status. The doctor is not eligible to practice at that time, and they can reinstate up to 5 years past the expiration date. So if at any time...
So he can practice for...
Yeah, for up to 4 months past. Mm-hmm. Now, the late fee does get assessed after 30 days from the expiration, so that's another challenge, you know, because it's $200.
And just to go back,
I also want to make a comment, if I may. For me, you know, I was out of work for a month, 6 weeks, very limited urgent care emergencies, but now we're kind of working our way back in. I think in his case, it's a little more unique because he's got to rely on folks that don't want to give up time going forward for a while. So he, you know, there's a little bit of difference there between his ability to get back on his feet. Just a thought.
I think that's a good point. This is Dr. Moffitt. I think that's a good point.
Margaret, were you going to say something?
No.
Okay. So that I can reiterate, we can discount or whatever term we want to use, but we can't extend the payment. We can't say, okay, we're going to cut this in half and you can pay it in 6 months.
Correct.
If we're going to cut it in half, it's due now.
Correct, because the executive order does not grant permission to override any statutes or rules that we have, as Ms. Baskin pointed out.
Yeah.
So That's how our rule is written regarding the renewal and reinstatement. You know, the time frame.
Yeah, because, I mean, obviously he would like a reduction, but he would also probably like some time to make the money to get it back. But if we can't do that, I think just by giving him a reduction, we're at least showing some compassion for his plight. Because, yeah, people aren't going to be leaving their offices for a while, so it's going to take him a while to get it back. So I don't have a problem doing something, I mean, reducing it somewhat. I do have a problem waiving off the complete two-year $450 fee.
I think that would be a fair compromise.
But I'm just one vote. Mm-hmm. Would someone like to make a motion?
This is Dr. Jones. Is his renewal due right now, like this month, or is it
May 22nd?
Yes,
May 22nd. Okay. So he has 4 months before he gets a late fee?
Or no, 30 days.
30 days, and then he'll get a late fee. Okay.
Yep, and then he has 4 months total to practice.
Okay.
So this is Dr. Moffitt. Maybe does anyone have any thoughts on how much of a reduction they think is appropriate?
I don't have a problem going with your idea of a half. We could even do a third and go to 300 instead of 450, or we could go to 25 instead of 450. I mean, I'm open to anything to show that, you know, we're looking at it, but I'm open.
So this, Dr. Moffitt, I think a half is my suggestion.
Okay. Is that a motion?
Not quite yet.
Okay. Dr. Jones?
I'm trying to build consensus.
Either way, I mean, I'm fine with that. I think I would probably give him 3 months. So that's what I would divide the 3 months out of the, you know, because I would assume he would be back in working in the next 3 months. But, you know, so.
Well, 3 months would basically be, that's a quarter, so it'd be about 1/8 of his, of the time. So it wouldn't amount to much, probably about $50. But,
maybe I'm not.
But, you know, like I said, we can go anywhere from 225, which would be half. Like I said, 300 would be, he'd be getting a third off, which anywhere in there I think is fair. So basically, I'm going to make a motion for $225 for a 50% reduction. And if we get a second, we can discuss it, and we can always vote it down if in discussion we decide we want to make it lower. But we got to, this will at least get us into a discussion mode. So I'll make a motion to reduce his renewal fee due to the executive order to $225 or 50% of the $450 renewal fee.
This is Dr. Moffitt. I second.
Okay. We have a motion and a second. Now, any further discussion? And just because there's a motion doesn't mean you need to give into that and not say anything. I mean, if you think it should be lower, say something. We can always vote it down. And if not, we can vote on it, too. So, no further discussion? Okay. And we'll vote on the motion. Dr. Jones.
Aye.
Dr. Moffitt?
Aye.
Dr. Hunter?
Aye.
Dr. Mastoris?
Aye.
I vote aye. It's unanimous. We'll do that. Now, Margaret, when you send the letter out, you'll let her know that as part of this, that we're going to waive, you know, I'm sure you'll put it in some diplomatic way so he knows that we've lowered it, but it's still due, and if he doesn't do this and doesn't do that, then all the ramifications we talked about as far as the 4 months and the 30 days and everything else come into play.
Most definitely.
Okay. Thank you. I know you will.
Thank you.
Okay. All right. Executive Director's Report.
Hey,
wait a minute. We went from F to nothing to G, call to the public. You didn't even give yourself a letter on the side of this.
Oh, my gosh, I can't believe I did that. I'm so sorry.
Man, you are slipping.
It's F.1.
Yeah, exactly.
Thank you, Dr. Chrysagas. Mr. President, members of the board, the appropriation for the Board of Optometry for fiscal year 20 is $240,700. As of April 30th, 2020, we are at 83.33% of our fiscal year elapsed, because remember, we fiscal year from July 1st to June 30th, with the board spending at 81.82%. Our beginning cash balance was $362,778.96, with an ending cash balance of $363,089.79. The executive orders, these are executive orders since our last meeting on April 10th. Executive Order 2020-27, I did just mention briefly at the last meeting, but also because it came after our agenda, I just wanted to mention it again. It's the Good Samaritan Executive Order, which basically creates immunity from liability for anybody treating patients during this time with the COVID. The COVID disease. Executive Order 2020-33 was released on April 29th by the governor. It's entitled Returning Stronger, Amending the Stay Home, Stay Healthy, Stay Connected Order. Arizona shall institute a Stay Home, Stay Healthy, Stay Connected policy that promotes physical distancing while also encouraging social connectedness. This builds on the actions the state has already taken and further memorializes some already in effect to slow the spread of COVID. So this is where the governor was just kind of reiterating to the members of the public of Arizona why essential businesses are the only ones that are open, but that he would be resuming other businesses soon. So hence Executive Order 2020-34, that was released by the governor on May 4th of 2020. Building on COVID-19 successes, resuming additional business operations for barbers, cosmetologists, and dine-in restaurants. Notwithstanding Executive Order 2020-33, effective Friday, May 8th, which is today, barbers and cosmetologists, as defined by their title, may resume operations provided they establish and implement protocols and best practices to address COVID. And all the usual stuff that goes with that, face covering for employees and customers, operating by appointment only, following protocols by the CDC. Also, notwithstanding Executive Order 2020-09, effective Monday, May 11th, which is this upcoming Monday of 2020, dine-in services may resume provided they establish and implement protocols and best practices for businesses to address COVID-19 with all the same requirements for the barbers and cosmetologists. Occupational Safety and Health Administration and the Arizona Department of Health Services, all other provisions of the Executive Order 2020-09 shall remain in effect. Persons visiting businesses providing services under this order shall not be deemed to be in violation of Executive Order 2020-33. That's just for clarification because, of course, not everyone's okay with the governor reopening essential business, non-essential businesses, so that portion of the order was to protect the people that are working under the other order of number 34. I hope that was clear because it sounded clearer in my head when I wrote that earlier, so I apologize if it wasn't. Basically, it's just allowing the non-essential businesses to slowly reopen in Arizona. Legislative update. Again, the 54th Legislature second regular session began Monday, January 13th of 2020. As of March 20th, 2020, the 68th day of the legislative session, 1,506 bills were introduced. Monday, February 10th of 2020 was the deadline for the House to introduce legislation. The last day for committees to hear bills in the Chamber of Origin was February 21st. As I reported last month, the legislature was suspended. All committee actions, they didn't have any business transacted except for the, quote, skinny budget, as they were calling it, just to keep the state running. Again, this agency is not in the general fund, so we weren't directly affected, or we wouldn't be directly affected by not having a budget specifically, well, at least the funding part of it. The legislature actually reconvened this morning. I think the House convened at 8 a.m., and the Senate is convening at 1 p.m. today, but both are expected to sign die, which would end the session. And that would be it. So all the bills that were introduced that were never fully reviewed and passed and went through the process would just die and most likely be reintroduced either in a special session this summer or just in the regular session next January. In my tenure at the state, which is 20 years, I haven't seen where the legislature has had a situation like this or a circumstance where basically the whole legislative session was canceled. So it'll be interesting to see what direction they take as far as getting some of these bills through. The only thing that could possibly happen, because I kind of have been hearing some gossip or rumor or however you want to say it, is that the Senate is not going to sign die, which means they would still hear bills. But with only one branch functioning, they wouldn't be able to pass anything because they still have to have committee of the whole and things like that. So that doesn't make any sense to me. Are there any future agenda items that this board would like me to put on a future agenda? Going once. Okay. And future board meeting dates. Where's my calendar? I would like to meet in June, on June 12th, if everyone's available.
You would?
I do expect that actually it probably will be a telephonic meeting as well, because we're still under that order from the governor's office for board meetings. So, and I do have three complaints that will be new that haven't been heard.
Oh, already?
Yes.
Wow.
Yeah.
Because we typically don't meet every month, and we've been doing that lately. I thought we were doing pretty well. But
we can
do
July,
it, especially just telephonically. No, telephonically is fine.
Okay.
Plus, you're going to be starting to get a lot of applications, as we know, and just in case there are some that you can't complete on your own, we'd probably have to meet to okay those anyway, so it's probably better. So even though we could say we don't know what it's going to be, we could just say right now it's going to be telephonic.
Correct.
That way people from out of town don't have to make any plans to come.
Correct.
So why don't we do that?
Okay. So June 12th is the date that we'd be looking at.
I do want you to know, though, that this this COVID crisis is causing me a problem because I get paid my per diem for time for distance, and these telephonic meetings, I'm losing out on some money here.
I believe Drs. Jones and Moffitt are losing out on some travel monies.
Yeah, so I think what we need to do, if this is still going on in January, what I have to do, I'm going to let you know about it on that.
Okay.
On that executive order.
That concludes my executive director's report, Mr. President. So June 12th, telephonic, 9 a.m.
Thank you very much.
Okay. All right.
Sounds good. Call to the public.
Margaret, members of the board, this is Mona Baskin. Margaret, I am available on the 12th, so just to let you know that.
Thank
to confirm
you, Ms. Baskin.
It.
Thank you. Call to the public. Hearing nothing there, I'll accept a motion to adjourn the meeting.
This is Dr. Jones. I make a motion to adjourn today's meeting.
Thank you. For a second. Please.
Dr. Hunter, I second it.
This is Dr. Moffitt. I second.
I'm sorry.
Okay. All right. I won't even ask for discussion on that. Dr. Moffitt?
Aye.
Sorry. I skipped Dr. Jones.
Yeah,
Dr. Jones.
Sorry.
Sorry.
I didn't pick up this time. I didn't pick up.
Dr. Hunter?
Aye.
Dr. Mastoris?
Aye.
I vote aye, so it's unanimous to adjourn the meeting at 10:17 a.m. Thank you very much. And if not before, we'll talk on the 12th of June.
Thank you so much, everybody.
Have a great weekend.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Have a great weekend.